Hi folks, my name is Vinay Badami and this is my colleague Guru. The talk today is about integration in the cloud, deep dive into BizTalk services. So to get started, how many of you here are using BizTalk server? Nice. How many of you are using BizTalk services or planning on using BizTalk services? Okay. How many are new and looking for information about BizTalk? New to BizTalk? I see. Okay. So feel free, let's keep the session interactive. Questions at any time along, welcome. Here's what we're going to be focusing today. MABS, short form for Microsoft Azure BizTalk Services. We're going to go through a functional overview and talk about what's available. We're then going to talk into the principles based upon which we built BizTalk services, certain key concepts, and a high-level architectural overview. We intersperse it with a few demos. One of them would be about how do you create a BizTalk service. Second one is about creating a EAI solution on BizTalk services, and the third one is creating a B2B or EDI service for on BizTalk services. Last, we would then go about speaking. You have existing server investments in BizTalk server. You have critical business processes running on top of them. How do you leverage them? How do you extend into the cloud? Right. we then talk about what's the future, what's coming next. So MABS. MABS is a managed service. The service is completely managed by Microsoft, available on the Azure cloud. The focus of the service is to basically help you build your solutions. In the first version, we did not go about trying to look at it as a platform. We built less extensibility. We built it more from perspective of build your solution and give you more canned views of the underlying platform. Subsequently, we will go about exposing the underlying platform over a period of time. We give you all the advantages of cloud, scalable, reliable. The whole of Azure is a secure environment, right? when we built this service, we went about talking to a whole bunch of customers. And one resounding ask from all customers is, hey, we don't want this to be a multi-tenant service. I don't want my business processes being affected by somebody else hogging up resource, bad code from another company, so on and so forth. So what you're getting with MABS is you're getting your own secure, dedicated environment in which only your pipelines, your business processes are running. So you are creating your own environment. Those machines, those VMs are pretty much reserved for you, and it's on those that your processes will run. As a result of this, you get predictable performance, and you get to manage and control your environment, and that control wouldn't have been possible in a multi-tenant environment. Last but not the least, once you go, getting a solution out there is the easier part. Managing it over a period of time is the more difficult one. We give you a good management solution as well as backup and disaster recovery parts of it. So three key, if you look at what constitutes MABS today at a high level, right? The first component that we provide for you is a B2B or EDI component. So why did we go about choosing this? When a company is doing B2B or EDI, they're already transacting over the internet, right? You're already outside of your corporate network. So, and you need to accept orders, you need to accept messages from your customer or your partner. And you need to do that in a reliable manner, right? So the cloud seems a very natural fit for this kind of a workload. So B2B workloads make themselves very amenable to the cloud. So we go about providing a whole bunch of B2B features, such as AS2, support for AS2, support for EDIFACT, X12. All of these protocols are supported. We allow you to create trading partner agreements with your partners. It's a simple go through the UI, create your agreements. We've made simplified the whole process and made it easy for you to go about doing this. Standard EDI features like NRR or non-repudiation response, archiving, tracking of messages, all of these functionalities are standardly available in our B2B package. Right? So that's a functional overview of what exists in B2B. We will dig in and show you a demo further on. EAI, or Enterprise Application Integration. Over here, we are providing you support for connecting via FTP or FTPS, HTTP, HTTPS, to a whole bunch of target LOB systems in your enterprise or on the cloud. Right? So you could be running your processing in the cloud, and you may want to deposit a message finally into a SQL server on your premise. And we enable that connectivity in a fairly simplistic manner to help you achieve your scenarios. So we support both connectivity to other data sources on the cloud, such as you could go deposit your messages into a blob storage on Azure or SBQ, et cetera. Or you could hybrid connect into your enterprise and talk to your SAP system. Very often, there is a need to map the incoming message into a format that is amenable for further processing as well as amenable for depositing into your end system or LOB. Right? To allow you to do this transformation, we provide you mapping tools. The concepts are fairly similar to what exists on the server, not too different. So this is what we provide overall in the EAI platform. Right? Now, these are the two verticals that we have provided out as solutions with a level of extensibility and is out there available on MABS today. To manage these solutions, we provide you the requisite tools for EAI to allow you to create your bridges and to extend your pipelines, et cetera. We allow you to do it in VS. So we give you a surface through which we give you a project system. We give you a surface through which you can go about and create your source, your destination, a pipeline in a visual manner, pretty much configure it. And we'll talk about how to do it further. On the management side, there are two surfaces through which we allow management. We'll talk about these going forward, but one of them is the Azure portal through which we allow you to create a BizTalk service, deploy it, scale it, et cetera. And the second one is a B2B portal through which you can manage your B2B parts of the solution, track your messages, et cetera. So these are our two management services. Management surfaces. So the highlights of our management capabilities is easy provisioning, allowing you to scale your solutions, disaster recovery, scheduled backup and restore, et cetera. So we overall think about our overall solution having three personas. And we'll talk about the solution in terms of these personas and see what facilities are available to each of the personas. For the developer, we give him ability in VS using a MABS project to basically be able to create an EAI-based solution The key benefits over here is rapid development. You have to write very little code. And with very little code, you get up and running. You're effectively dragging and dropping on a palette, configuring properties. And with that, you have a basic workflow going. Now, if you want to further customize, that's when you would get about to writing code. Otherwise, it's pretty much a no-code solution. I'll get to that further, but short answer, when we are extending, we would use C Sharp. It's configuration driven in the sense that you're configuring existing templates rather than writing code to create pipelines or any of those artifacts. So a simple but powerful model is what we offer to the developer today. The next persona that we talk about is an IT admin. So what is it that the IT admin requires? The IT admin needs the ability to create a BizTalk service, deploy it, monitor it, scale it when load increases, and basically be able to update it as well as back it up, back up and restore. Right? So those are the capabilities that we provide to the IT admin, and this is provided through the AUX portal or the manage.windowsazure.com. The third persona that we talk about is the business admin. And the business admin, we basically offer him a portal through which he can create an agreement, a B2B agreement through which company A and company B are transacting over EDIFACT or X12, et cetera, and configuring the sources, the destinations, whatever transformations that need to happen, right? And instead of basically all this happening through code, we're just giving him a very simplistic view through which an administrator can do this work instead of having to involve a developer to bring in another trading partner. Right? So again, this is pretty much a no-code solution over here where a business administrator should be able to get a whole bunch of the work done. Questions so far? Now, we have a whole bunch of editions of the service available out there. I'll go through these, describe their abilities. The free service is something that we announced as part of this ticket. This is there for hybrid connections, and the intent is to allow a developer who's doing websites, etc., to basically be able to connect to his on-prem SQL databases using these hybrid connections, right? So that's the free SKU. It's the latest entrant into this family. The developer SKU. The developer SKU is used for developing a MABS solution. There are no SLA guarantees around of this SKU. It's just purely for a development and test environment. After that, we have basic, standard, and premium. Effectively, it is the basic is probably good enough for a small workshop, medium-sized org would look for standard, and premium's more for the enterprise class people. Based upon the number of messages you process, et cetera, you could pick an appropriate SKU. Right? So these are the SKUs that are available for you. The next slide goes in depth in relation to a whole bunch of features that differentiate these various queue. I'm not going to talk through this. The same is available out on MSDN, and you could look it up on MSDN. So that's as far as the SKUs goes. In relation to our release cadence, we ended up being available for general availability last November. And then we had an update of the service in, I think, mid-Feb, where we introduced a whole bunch of new features like support for EDIFACT, which was the topmost ask after we went GA, saying that without support for EDIFACT, the It's a non-starter in the European markets. So support for EDIFACT was one of the big things that we added in. Post that, we, as part of that, we also did end up adding in support for scheduled backup and recovery, which was another ask from the admins. So our intent is to keep updating the service on a three-month cadence and keep delivering features out there. Okay. With that, we get into the next section, which is diving into certain key concepts and architecture. So we think about BizTalk server and BizTalk service as forming the BizTalk platform. Right? We do not think about it as two separate disjunct entities, but overall one platform, which is providing you the three capabilities in the form of B2B or EDI, enterprise application integration or EAI, and BPM. Right? Today, the BPM or support for long-running workflows, support for business processes, et cetera, is available only through orchestration on the BizTalk server. It will be made available in the BizTalk service in the near future. Right? And we are working towards that implementation, and we'd have it out there. Similar is the story with the rules engine, which is available on the server today, but will be available in the service offering soon. Along with that, we have the tooling for you to develop your solutions, the manageability frameworks, or manageability surfaces, and the rest of the supporting infrastructure. So those are the horizontals on which we end up building the rest of these pillars. In the last section, we'll also get to talking about how we are thinking of this as a continuum and not one or the other. So here's a tenant's view of a MABS application. So you would go to the Azure portal, and you would create a MABS BizTalk service. When you create a BizTalk service, what happens for you behind the hoods is that one scale unit of a BizTalk service gets provisioned for you. And effectively, when that happens, when we talk about one scale unit, at all points, you're given two VMs, right, running the same identical roles. So this already gives you high availability to start off with. If one of your VMs was to crash, the other one is still accepting messages. And when you scale in terms of scale units. So when you scale to two scale units, you end up with four units, four VMs. When you get to three scale units, six, so on. And we allow you to scale an instance up to eight scale units. Right? So when you create a BizTalk service, what ends up happening is that our bits get, these VMs get provisioned. These are effectively worker roles, Azure worker roles, onto which our WABS services get deployed and are exposed out as a HTTP endpoint, which is secured by a SSL certificate. This is the endpoint at which your partners would be posting messages or other applications will be posting messages. Fair? Questions till now? Okay. So, if you're building an EAI solution, you would build your EAI solution using Visual Studio, okay? And you would deploy your EAI solution from Visual Studio to your service, right? Once your application is deployed, now other applications can start talking to your deployed application. So the application that needs to talk would end up getting authenticated through ACS, get an ACS token, and would then post messages to the HTTP endpoint, as a result of which it would get routed to your application. And whatever your application is doing, it would end up processing it in the manner that you have configured it for. Right? When we have a tracking database, So every message that flows through the system ends up in a tracking database, and we expose out a tracking view. The view is a bit rudimentary today, but all of your messages end up in the tracking database. We'll take a look at this in one of our demos. Since it's a managed service, Microsoft needs the ability to basically know that your service is up there and running, the SQL databases are okay, so on and so forth. So for this, we end up collecting a whole bunch of monitoring and archiving data, which gets stored into Azure Blob Storage, which we would have provisioned when we deployed or created the service, right? And then we have a whole alerting and monitoring system behind the scenes, which kind of keep processing these logs that are generated. Now, if we find that your endpoint is down, et cetera, we end up raising alerts. And in fact, what ends up happening behind the hoods is these alerts end up hitting our support people who end up, if it's a SEV2 or a SEV1 alert, the product team gets called and we are on the call within about 5 to 10 minutes of the alert being raised. Right? So that's the overall management infrastructure behind, which basically helps to give you the guarantee that we keep the services up and healthy. Okay? Please. The tracking database is just a pure SQL Azure database. The monitoring and archiving store is a blob storage.
Okay. Are they putting it on the same VM as the VSAN service or a separate VM?
The SQL Azure database is a completely separate hosted service, right? So we provision a database for you when we create your service. The SQL, the store, blob storage is another Azure service,
okay,
and we request. You will end up basically creating two VMs per unit. Right. The other endpoint or the other surface that we provide you is a BizTalk portal, which, as we spoke about, the B2B admin goes there to basically configure his B2B applications. And he can configure and deploy a new bridge whenever there's a new trading partner with whom your company needs to do business, et cetera. So that's the other interface through which a B2B bridge can get deployed. Right? So this is a tenant's view of a MABS application and the various endpoints that end up talking to the application, either for management in the case of Azure Portal and the BizTalk portal, or Visual Studio, which are all monitoring or deploying applications, and the business app, which is actually sending runtime messages to the endpoint. Right. So at this point, we'll get through a quick demo of how you would go about creating a BizTalk service. Guru? No, it's one, I think. One and eight. Yeah.
All right. So what we have here is a regular Azure portal. So you see BizTalk services listed on the left. So we'll be creating a new BizTalk service today. Let's click on New. Where is BizTalk service? Here. New. What happened? What happened? BizTalk service grayed out. Say something here. Or did we max out? Which one should I delete? I can delete IM3.
I'm free to delete. That's a whole new issue. I'll do it on my account. I keep going. Let me sign in and do it in my account. Sorry, guys, just signing in with a new account, that's all. Creating a new BizTalk service. Is able to see it or no? Okay. So service name, then let me call it as Guru Ticket. So if you see this, these are the editions that Vinay showed earlier. So there's a free preview edition. There is a developer edition and a basic and a standard. So let me select the just a basic edition here. And it gives me a domain URL that I can connect to. Click next. I can choose to use an existing storage or create a new storage account. Storage account, I use the same name here. And click next. So this is the database corresponding to that one. So new SQL Server, server name. So what this is doing behind the scene, it's actually provisioning the storage account, the database account, the new database server that I created, and provisioning the virtual machines associated with that for hosting the BizTalk service. So this generally takes about like 15 to 20 minutes, depending on the complexity of the configuration that I chose. If it is an enterprise SKU that I had chosen, I can scale up to 8 scale units. So it actually provisions that 16 plus machines. And if it is, in this case, a basic machine, so it configures about 2 virtual machines and SQL Server and tracking database behind the scene. And on the free SKU, it takes like 2 seconds because there it's not really provisioning anything in terms of database and tracking database. It is just providing a hybrid connection. So for a developer to just connect to an on-prem system, you just create a free preview and a free system. I call it free preview because it is currently in preview for until about another 3 months. So that connection can go through like instantly. So the creation process, like it is just a click process. So where you're giving your username for SQL Server and you are giving a name for your service, a unique name for your service. Wait a minute.
So that's pretty much what you need to do to create a BizTalk service. Guru, do you just want to go back to the portal and show them some of the other aspects of the portal?
This one or the other one? This one, yes.
Yes.
So let me go to one of those things that is already connected and click on Manage.
Oh, no.
Did it drop?
Fine, we'll get to it on the next one. Maybe you can just get back to my ticket demo. And, okay.
You're back.
Right. get to the ticket demo thing.
Yeah, yeah.
We can then show it on the next demo. Okay. So we've kind of covered these in some manner. We'll kind of introduce a few more new concepts about what exists behind the scenes. We have spoken about the portal. We actually haven't seen the portal, but we have spoken about the B2B portal, which is where the B2B admin would go to configure trading partner agreements, et cetera. Visual Studio is where the developer would go to create enterprise application integration solutions. And we have an ability for you to use PowerShell also if you're an admin in order to basically do all the management operations through PowerShell. So those are some of our entry points in. We'll go to the right side. We spoke about the monitoring store as a place where we end up collecting performance counters, event logs, et cetera, for us to do monitoring of your service. As a tenant, you also have access to the same data, and you could also use it for whatever reasons you may want to. When we deploy a service, we create a config store. A config store, so basically when you deploy your application, the application gets shredded and various aspects of that application are stored in the config store about here is my pipeline and this pipeline means these set of things. Here's the source to this pipeline. Here's the destination of this pipeline, so on and so forth. All of that stuff gets shredded out and is stored into the config store. Right? The tracking store, as we already spoke about, is where we would end up, is a tracking database which tracks each and every message as it flows through the system so that it can be used as an audit trail. So that's the purpose of the stores on the right side. Now, the artifacts are fairly simple. So when you're transacting with a trading partner, you might need his certificate in order to post to his endpoint. Okay? Typically, most of these transactions happen in a secure manner, so you might need to basically encrypt the data with his public key, so certificates need to be stored. So along with your solutions, you will need a whole bunch of these certificates that you would need to upload based upon whom you're talking to. You might decide that the out-of-the-box pipeline doesn't suffice for you and you have some special needs as a result of which you want to customize it. So you write your own DLLs using C# through a message inspector interface. We will talk about it. And those assemblies will need to be uploaded. So that's your second artifact. So an incoming message needs to adhere to a particular schema, or you might want to transform it into a particular schema for further processing. Right? So schemas need to be uploaded. So that's another form of artifact. And last but not the least, you're, in all these message processing solutions, you're transforming from schema A to schema B. You're mapping between a source and a destination, et cetera. And those transforms or map is the fourth kind of an artifact. Right? So those are the four artifact types that today we support in MAMS. Going forward, there will be other artifacts like rules, workflow definitions, et cetera. But for today, these are the artifacts that we have out there. Please. Fair question. We use the message box in the server because we support long-running workflows. Over here, we do not still support long-running workflows, and therefore, we do not need the concept of a message box. Right? The design pattern around which we have designed the initial implementation is that we will accept a message and at least once. Okay. So if somebody sent you a message, right, then the message either went through successfully in the system and an ACK got generated and sent back to the trading partner as a receipt, right? In which case, all is healthy. Or an ACK never went back, in which case, he's going to retransmit the message for you, right? So today's solution is not meant for long-running workflows. It's meant for synchronous receipt and acknowledgement of messages, right? Which is why we don't necessarily need a message box. You could. Can you hold that question when I get to basically talking about extending server and service? I will talk about how you can go there. Okay? Ask me when I get to that section. Okay? Then we have a concept of bridges. I'll get through these in the next slide, so I'm just not going to get into detail in relation to the bridges. Trading partner management. So typically, you have a partner with whom you're trying to exchange business-to-business messages, right? So the partner, that's what models a partner. You're in agreement with a partner, so the agreement models actually that particular aspect of trading with that partner. And the partner has a profile, which is what is his company, what's his contact, et cetera. So that's the profile of the partner. And you're in a partnership with a partner, right? So those are the entities that are modeled on the EDI side of the world to allow you to communicate with a partner. We get a bit further into these in subsequent slides. So this is the B2B model. A partner has a business profile, right? A partner can be in many partnerships, right? Walmart is in a partnership with many of its retailers, right? So typically, a partner has 1-to-many partnerships. Each partnership is reflected through an agreement, right? And what is the agreement? The agreement, in addition to a bunch of other properties, contains the protocol settings through which you can communicate with that partner. Right? So this is effectively what is modeled on the B2B portal to allow you to basically establish trading relations with a partner.
And this is not very different from what we have in the server. If for those of you who are used to EDA on the server, we already have a trading partner management system on the server. The agreement model is there on the server, just that it doesn't come out in this clean way because there is a TPM side of it, and then there is a messaging side of it, and then there is this whole send port, receive port configuration which manages the protocol side of it. So here, this is just a clean way of understanding how all these things come together.
Fit together. Okay. So what's a bridge in a BizTalk service, right? A bridge effectively is a manageable entity. You create a bridge by composing a pipeline which is front-ended by a source or a set of sources and back-ended by a destination or a set of destinations. Okay? So this is effectively a pipeline bridging between source and destinations is a bridge effectively. Okay? What could your source be? Your source could be any one of endpoints, like it's a FTP endpoint which a partner has configured for you, so you're picking up messages or files from that FTP endpoint. It could be a HTTP endpoint to which your partner is posting messages. It could be SFTP, it could be service bus, it could be blob storage. It's a whole bunch of such sources. What could your destination be? A bunch of them are listed there. It could be a SQL Azure. It could also be a SQL Azure on the premise. Okay, I'm sorry, a SQL database on the premise. So, what's a pipeline? In the version of MABS which is available to you today, pipeline is what a message flows through and is the unit through which a message flows through and the message is processed. Okay, we haven't provided you a composable workflow, but rather a templatized workflow consisting of 4 stages, V, E, T, E, and a routing stage. Okay? V stands for validation. When a message comes in, you typically end up validating the message against a schema or a set of schemas. So you've configured your pipeline as this pipeline accepts messages of which are adherent to one of these schemas. And the validation scheme stage effectively validates that the message conforms to at least one of those schemas. Okay? Else the message is rejected right there. So that's your validation phase. E stands for enrich. In the enrich phase, you are doing property promotion, right? Very similar to what you do in the BizTalk server. So you could be promoting properties, and based upon those promoted properties, you could be doing things further down the pipeline. You could promote a property, and based upon that promoted property, route to different destinations, for example. I don't
support what?
Demotion.
Demotion.
Yeah.
No.
Is it a
Yeah, I don't
know.
I don't think we
what is demotion?
It would be the opposite of the promotion. It would remove the
property.
That is promotion. That is possible in the server, and that is possible here. So the question is, like, hey, my incoming data does not contain a value. Like, let's say I have customer ID and customer name. Customer ID is 10. Customer name is null. And I want to look up to a value for customer ID 10 equals something, and I want to populate it in my outgoing value. Is that a fair thing? Okay. So I want to look up to a value during mapping, but I don't understand why it is called a demotion, but it's not the opposite of promotion, by the way. So we are promoting a property and looking up to that property and looking up to a value externally and populating it in my transformation. Yes, that can be done. That can be done. So that's not the opposite of promotion.
Yeah. So the third stage is transform. In transform, we provide you a mapping tool. Using the mapping tool, you would map from your input schema to the output schema you want to. Okay, so transform is effectively your mapping stage. And post of transformation, you may actually want to promote properties post of transformation. Right, so you have another enriched stage post of transformation to allow you to do that. So effectively, this is a templatized pipeline through which you can end up just through configuration doing all of these things rather than writing code for any of these. So that's the notion of a pipeline.
That's another enrich.
Another enrich, because post of transformation, you may want to do one more property promotion based upon transform properties.
You need to log it. How big of a message can you process through Bistrox services? Currently, we support all of the workload that the server does, like EDA workload. So because it does not have that limitation like you would expect in like a service bus kind of a scenario, because this is built from the ground up for that enterprise workload. So if you could process it with a server, you can process it with this. Like you get a 2 GB workload, for instance. If you can process it from an FTP server, because how am I going to transport the 2 GB message? So probably I'll be picking it up from an FTP location. I can pick it in and split out those interchanges and then do the EDA transformation. Typically, a EDA document contains multiple records, so you're not going to be putting that entire thing on one load. Yes, please. Yes, so that question is slightly reversed. It is, can I call custom code from my pipeline? So in Bistrox parlance, we used to have a pipeline component. So for you call it in one of the stages, be it an assembly stage or a routing stage or a transformation stage. Those were placeholders for calling custom code, right? So here you can call custom code and pass your message stream to that. So those are called message inspectors, which we'll be demonstrating soon. So if I have an incoming message that I need to do something with that stream, like I want to populate it with some additional values, or I want to read that stream and transform it something else and then pass it back to the pipeline, yes, you can do that. So in
very similar to Bitstock. This is also an immutable stream. That means the incoming stream has to be secured, and then you take a copy of it and change it and then send it back. So the IPipeline interface is slightly different in this. All right, so this was an EAI demo, right?
This is the EDI demo.
EDI demo, okay.
So we're going to go through an EDI demo. In this EDI demo, we'll first walk through the B2B portal. How do you get to the B2B portal? If you've created your subscription, if you've created your Windows, if your Maps subscription, then you get this Manage button at the bottom. Click on the Manage button, and that puts you into the B2B portal. Okay. So let's look at the B2B portal. We've modeled two companies here, Company 1 and Company 2. To effectively create a company, all that you need to do is give it its name. Most of the rest of the information is
optional.
Okay. So that's the profile for a company. You would then go about trying to create an agreement between the two companies, because these are the two partners who have to exchange messages between them, right? So what does it mean to basically create such an agreement, right? We look at an agreement that has been created. So you give the agreement a name, right? And then you're going to put the two partners who are party to that agreement. Can you just stay on the general settings tab for a minute? You're naming the two companies who are partners to that agreement, right? Down below, you see something called the identifier, right? The identifier, CMP1 and CMP2, are actually what come in your messages when posted. The B2B X12 or EDIFACT messages are going to have those identifiers which identify those companies, okay? And these identifiers, I think, are handed out by the Dun and Bradstreet and such other entities, right? So that is what.
It doesn't have to be. It's whatever.
Oh, it's whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So that's what. That's the way that those are modeled. Then. If you want to track your messages, et cetera, you get those checkboxes, and checking them lets you basically track your messages. Okay. Now, you're basically going to say, where am I receiving my messages from? In this particular case, we have basically said I'm receiving my messages from an FTP server, and you're configuring various pieces of information in relation to that FTP server. Right? So that's your source for this particular bridge. Then over here, we are basically trying to say that we are using, this is the, what would you say?
This is the EDIFACT
schema to which the incoming message has to adhere, right? We haven't done any transformations. And in the route, we are saying on a successful message, basically send this message to a blob storage, okay? So if I accept the message and the message is as per the schema, et cetera, for further processing, I'm going to put this into my blob storage and process it later, right? I'm going to generate the response, but I'm going to process this message later. So that's what we do in relation to configuring the send side, the receive side. There's a set of similar configurations on the send side. Right. So if you look at the send side, go to. Yeah. So the response generated would correspond to this, right? And the transport endpoint to which we are going to send back is another FTP, is the same FTP server, but a different folder. The slash out folder on that same FTP server, right? So in order for you to basically transact with your partner and send and receive EDI messages. All that you're doing is going through this UI to go create your sources, your protocols, and your receive pipeline and your send pipeline, right? Once you do this and once you deploy this pipeline, effectively think about it as you have two pipelines that have been provisioned for you, okay? One of them is the receive pipeline and the other is the send pipeline, okay? The receive pipeline is accepting from the from your partner's FTP location. It's pulling that FTP server, picking up any messages that exist there. It's going to go through the waiter phases, and if it gets accepted, the message is going to get deposited into the blob store that we pointed it to, right? And the receive pipeline is for sending back responses to the same FTP server but on a different directory, okay? So with this, we will go about trying to put a message on the FTP server and watching what happens. So the file that was copied is a EDIFACT message. We're copying that message onto the FTP server's in directory, which has been configured as the receive directory, right? And if you look at it, the message got picked up, processed through the pipeline. The message got, if you look at the text, it got converted from the EDIFACT format into an XML format as it went through the pipeline, right? And we had configured the blob storage as the endpoint to put it to if the message was successfully processed. Okay, so that's where the message went to. Right, and if we basically monitor the out directory, we will end up getting. We'll end up getting the responses on the response messages into the out directory. Okay.
Anyway.
Okay. So this may take a minute or two. We'll go back and look at it at a further point. But this is effectively the notion of what happens on the overall B2B transaction. Is you're accepting messages, processing it, and sending back responses.
Yeah, one other thing that that is interesting here is like if you, for those of you who come from the server background, for all those agreements that we have created on the server today, we can directly point to the management database and import those agreements into this as well. So we don't have to recreate those pretty complex agreements. So creating a trading partner agreement, although it looks so seemingly simple on the browser with a couple of clicks here, usually the data that is included there is quite complex. Most of the time you'll be going back and forth to your partner trying to identify the identifiers that they are using and the schema that they are using and the transforms that they are using. So it's a complex work that most of you in this room have already done with the server. So you can import those settings the way it is. It is not just from BizTalk server, you can also import from other EDA processing systems like Gentran. Because at the end of the day, an agreement is just a definition of how this thing needs to be transacted. So each system has its own way of defining it. So you can import it and recreate this agreement here using an object model. You had a question?
Yeah, okay. So basically you're saying that the online version has no orchestration. So you are going to get into the hybrid connectivity because a lot of those incoming EM messages aren't as simple as just accepting that blob format. You're going to want to have some EPM around that.
Yes, great question. So the question is like, if you do not have a workflow on the cloud today, how are you going to do this on-prem to cloud thing? So the most of the workload, if you look at it on a typical EDA itself, outside of the BPM side of it, it happens after the EDA message is processed, right? So you receive that long EDA message and you break it up into minor interchanges and records. So it is after that you do that downstream system, yes. So you process it on the cloud, you send back the acknowledgement to your partner, then you can send that processed message in an XML format or in a manner that is compatible for your downstream system.
either through adapter services directly to the on-prem system like a SAP system, or you can send it for further processing by Bistock server on-prem. On the cloud, yeah.
And just sending back the acknowledgement, but if you need to send back a more detailed acknowledgement
or an acknowledgement back from your SAP system,
that has to
come from your server. That is right.
Okay.
That is right.
So when we talk about extending the server to the cloud, I'll explain that part to you. Okay. So hybrid connectivity. We realize that there are enough of your data sources that are on the prem, and for various reasons, people would be hesitant to move them out of their premise, right? So we basically look at it as, how do we enable the cloud to talk to your premise and give you a hybrid connectivity solution for you to talk to your on-prem resources? Effectively, think about it as projecting your on-prem resources to the cloud. Okay, so that's what hybrid connectivity does for you. So what do? There's a cloud application. Okay. When you provision hybrid connectivity on the premise, we end up creating a service bus relay. Okay. And via the service bus relay, we can effectively, the service bus relay is provisioned by Bistock Adapter Services, right? And using this service bus relay, we can talk between cloud to your on-prem systems. Okay, so as a result of this, your destination could be a SQL database on the premise. And that's what we will get into and demo next. Right? Go ahead, let's get to the demo and then we can come back to talk about user code.
Okay. So do you want to talk about the scenario?
Okay, so the scenario over here is, I have an application which is going to post to a service bus queue. The service bus queue is effectively acting as my source. Okay? Then I have an EI pipeline which is picking up from service bus queue, processing it, and depositing the final message into a SQL server on the premise. Okay? This is effectively showing you the EI solution in VS, showing you how to configure an EI solution, and also basically exhibiting hybrid connectivity to you. So that's what we're trying to show you over here. So
so currently we have zero records here, four rows, but who is not showing up? Okay. So I executed this. So those two messages have been posted. So what we are doing here is a simple client app which is posting two orders to a service bus queue. And we have a bridge that has been deployed on the cloud that is going to be receiving that message. That is going to be receiving that message from the service bus queue and sending it down to a SQL server. But while doing that, so in between, we have the bridge, which is going to receive a flat file message. Because if you look at that application that posted it to service bus queue, I'm just posting it like a string. Right? I'm just posting it like a string. It is not going in as an XML message or a SQL message. So it is technically, it's a flat file. So I'm going to use a flat file decoder. And
can you click on the flat file decoder?
Huh?
Can you just click on the flat file
decoder? So I'm going to go through the flat file decoder. Once it is done through the decoding, it becomes an XML message. So I validate that XML message. I'm not doing anything in the enrich, but subsequently I'm calling a transformation. So let's look at this transform. This is an interesting one. So this is the incoming structure of that XML message. This is the form that SQL is expecting. So it's an insert message into SQL server. But while inserting it, we wanted to do some transformation where I'm just saying unit price times quantity is the total amount. So I just use a simple functoid which says unit price times quantity. And once this is done, the subsequent part is where the custom code gets in, wherein we are calling for message inspection to see if that if the value of that message, total message, is greater than $1,000, then I call it as approved, else it is called rejected. Right, so if you go back to this configuration, after the transformation, in this enrich code, we are calling the custom code here. This is very similar to how we would do it in Bistock pipeline. Right, so through the pipeline process itself, you call a custom code, and within the custom code, you have access to that message, and I'm validating some promoted properties within that message, and taking an action based on that. So the conceptually, it is very similar to how we would do in a Bistock pipeline. So now that we sent this message, let's go back to SQL and see whether we got those. We got these two new orders, right?
So can we just get to the custom inspector? No, stay on the solution.
No, it's a solution. Okay.
Yeah. Stay on the solution, and let's just go back to that. Not the test app. So if you look at this one, right? So this is the custom message inspector. What we need you to do is to implement this interface iMessage inspector. Okay. Once you implement iMessage inspector, effectively you're implementing an execute method that is there as part of that interface, and you do whatever you need to do in the as part of your custom processing. Okay. So over here we are looking at effectively the
XML
total amount. We're using an XML reader. We are looking at the total amount field from the XML, and if it is less than 1,000, adding in setting approval status to rejected. Otherwise, it is accepted and promoting that property. Okay, so that's the way that you would go about writing custom code in a pipeline to extend it if you need to. Okay,
and in the routing also we explain.
Yeah.
This
one, right? So okay, basically, now the output of the pipeline on the process order, we have put in a filter condition saying that if the approval status is accepted, that only then does it go to the SQL server, right? So this is effectively the way that you can do content-based routing, where based upon certain conditions, you can route to different destinations, right? And we allow you to do it by having various filter properties. Right? So let's just go back to the tracking thing and tracking
page.
So if you looked at the test, the unit test case through which we were trying to post messages to SB, two of the orders would make it through, and two of the orders, the total quantity would be less than 1,000 and wouldn't make it through, right? So if you, what happens to those messages? If you basically look at the tracking page, we haven't configured any destination for those, and those messages are now getting dropped, right? And was it on the protocol?
So these were the custom messages being called, transform message extractor, and this one. Not allowing me to select that. Okay. No filter match for the message.
So this is effectively telling you that for this particular message, which where the quantity was less than 1,000, there wasn't any filter matching, and those messages are getting tracked. So effectively, you could go to this tracking message tracking view to get a view of what happened with various messages as they flow as they went through your system.
Once again, comparing to that message box question that somebody was asking earlier, right? In Bistock, the assumption there is like before you submit a message, you have defined your subscriber. A subscriber has to exist before the message is published to Bistock because it's a PubSub engine. So you have to publish and there has to be a subscriber to take it on. Here, this is a routing engine. You get a message, there are n number of subscribers potentially who could say that I'm going to subscribe to a property of this message. And there could not be any subscriber also, right? So when you're getting that message, it says that if there is at least one subscriber who's saying I want to subscribe to a property of this message, I'm going to deliver it to that one. So it could act in this particular bridge, we saw that there was a subscriber who said, I'm subscribing for everything that says it is equal to approved. I could have a different subscriber that says that is equal to rejected. There could be a different subscriber who says, I don't care. I'm going to subscribe to everything. So there could be three different subscribers subscribing on the same property with three different values. Right? So this is a routing-based algorithm. So the need for that publishing and persistence is not necessarily true all the time. So that PubSub engine and routing engine, is that's the difference there.
So we'll quickly go through some of these slides. We've already spoken about the concept. Executing user code in maps, we saw the message inspector. The message inspector can be put at the beginning or end of any one of the phases within the pipeline, on entry or on exit handlers. Okay, so you can introduce them at any one of those stages. And the way that you would do it, we showed you the way that you configured the inspector on the pipeline. There are some rules about what you need to, what are do's and don'ts in the message inspector. It's up on MSDN, so look it up there. You would effectively derive a class from iMessage Inspector and implement that. You compile your code into a DLL, and then you would configure it on the bridge surface such that it's an entry or an exit handler of a particular phase. Right? So that's pretty much what you do to write custom code into a pipeline. We've seen this, so the EI demo, we just went through it. Okay. So now we get to the next part, which is, hey, I've a ton of investments on BizTalk server. Now we have the service. How do we leverage the two, and how do we make these two work together? Right? So currently, most of your solutions are on the premise. Right? The cloud provides scalability, high availability, elasticity, et cetera. For example, one of our BizTalk service pipelines, the Microsoft Treasury pipeline, actually, which basically processes Xbox orders, has peak time at Christmas and shopping season. Okay, and they end up having to provision, they end up having to peak provision, and therefore there is a whole bunch of resource commit. Those people are looking at trying to move that B2B processing to the cloud because of the elastic nature of the cloud, okay? And trying to leverage the cloud for its elasticity and move the B2B processing there. So you have to accept the message, you have to acknowledge the message, but you can take time to send the final acknowledgement, which was exactly the question that the lady asked, right? So that's a scenario that we're working with them and trying to get them on board. Then on-prem basically is you've virtualized your business processes, you model them, you have your orchestrations running on the premise, right? And the BizTalk server is basically providing connectivity to from various applications to your line of business systems. Okay, so you have these two things, right? So our suggestion is move to the cloud on your own terms, right? Pick the workloads that are where you would be able to exploit the synergies of the cloud, right? The first and the foremost workload that came to mind, and which is why we put emphasis on B2B and EDI solutions, was because you need high availability and you don't want to drop a message. You want to accept every order out there. Okay, and the cloud basically provides you that overall infrastructure to do that for you. And you have this peak time processing where you can expand your capacity, pay for it for that time, and you can reduce it down when you don't have your peak loads, right? So the B2B workload is one that is very amenable to moving to the cloud, right? The other workloads that are amenable to moving to the cloud would be workflows and rules, where they end up taking a whole bunch of CPU. Okay, in of those cases, you could basically move them to the cloud and basically, again, exploit the fact that, hey, I can scale out the cloud solution and I can pay for the expanded processing when I need to and reduce the processing when I don't need to. So that would be our advice, right? The long-running workflow and rules are not yet available, but will soon be available in a preview offering on the cloud. Now getting down to, okay, I accepted my B2B message. How do I get that to the premise for my BTS server to process it for further orchestration? There's a whole bunch of methods through which you can do that. After you have accepted the message, you can put the message into a service bus queue, you can put it into blob storage, et cetera, and your on-premise BTS server can accept the message from there, run its orchestration against it, and deposit the message in a similar endpoint.
You can talk about it, MSIT.
Yeah, and deposit the message into a similar endpoint, which your pipeline in the B2B pipeline in the cloud can then use to send back the receipt to the final response to your trading partner. Okay, so you could bridge between the cloud and your BTS server through these mechanisms. Right, if your only need was to deposit the final response into an end system like SAP, SQL, etc., and there was not a need to go through BTS, then the hybrid connectivity solution that we showed you lets you just achieve that directly, right? So what I've put on board over here is effectively what we are working with MSIT, the Treasury Department of MSIT, right? Who is processing about 32,000 streams of data and about 1 billion worth of sales flow through this pipeline, right? So this is, so if you look at it, think about the lower end of the pipeline, which is effectively modeling today, where they have an external endpoint. All the partners are publishing their messages to that external endpoint. Okay, then they have a gateway which is basically going across the CORP firewall and doing some WTF routing. Okay, I'll get to what WTF routing is a bit later. The messages are deposited into a file server, a file share effectively, and the BTS server is working off of the messages deposited on the file share, putting it into a SAP or any other such line of business application, and the reverse acknowledgement also flows in the reverse direction on the same path. So the lower end is effectively today's state of the universe using BizTalk services, okay? BizTalk server, sorry. And migrating 3,200 streams of data is not going to be a overnight task, right? So here's the way that we are working with them. In fact, out of the 3,200 streams of data, a vast majority of them don't need, long-running orchestrations. Enough of them basically can live with EDI-based processing. So the first step of the overall process was to create a URL forwarding gateway and get all partners to start submitting to the URL forwarding gateway. The URL forwarding gateway is effectively a web ASP.NET extension sitting out there, built with multiple instances so that it has reliability out there. And today, all it does is you put that pipeline in, and that is forwarding to the external endpoint. So everybody is hitting a new endpoint, and that is forwarding to the old endpoint, right? Now, I went through and I figured how to migrate stream A to the cloud, right? I then configure that endpoint to start basically saying, forward only stream A to my WABS instance, which I have provisioned out there in the cloud, right? So using this approach, and That is effectively the WTF routing. So in each one of the URLs that they're, the message streams have a URL, and one of the parameters in that query string or is effectively a WTF which identifies the message stream. And based upon that message stream, they are, what would you say, either forwarding to the on-prem system or forwarding to the cloud, right? And once they get to the cloud, they are effectively processing that message all the way through on an EDI pipeline and ending it onto their line of business SAP server. Okay, so that is, that's what we're working
here, if you look at it, there, both the systems can be working in parallel, and BizTalk server becomes the fallback system. Right? So if I have the way they classified it was like high impact, low impact, medium impact, business impact basis. Right? So whatever grade that they wanted to choose, like they first say, let me do the low business impact data on the cloud and validate how it works. Once they feel comfortable, then they can move the rest of it. So until such time, the fallback system is still in place, and they can just flip a switch and come back over here.
Right. So this is the architecture with which we're working with them. And the goal is to get them migrated over the next 6 to 8 months. Okay. So what's next? In the management tools area, today we have we're going to be working towards Azure AD integration. This will give you multi-factor authentication. We're going to keep updating our managed services on a regular basis. In the EI world, we're going to come out with a simple adapter extensibility framework, right? We're going to provide a whole bunch of out-of-the-box adapters. But if you had some other system to which we didn't have support, you could use this adapter extensibility framework and write your adapters for it. Right? Today, we don't support derived types in our transforms. And that's another thing that's going to be available pretty soon. Custom code, we support in the EI bridges, but we don't in the EDI bridges. That support for that is going to be coming in. Right? The big ones are in the BPM area. Today, we have pretty much zero in the BPM area. And those are where our big investments are coming in. So we would be basically be working upon giving you long-running workflows, which would be the equivalent of orchestrations on the BizTalk server. So that's going to be available soon. You will have the equivalent of BRE in the cloud. And you will have a process designer in VS through which you can build out your business processes. So effectively, the way that you would build out your Xlang orchestrations, the equivalent based upon a BPMN-based notation, we're going to give you a designer in VS to let you build your business processes out. There's going to be a new and enriched rules designer also in VS. Right? So VS is going to be the surface for you to build and configure your business applications.
Around November of this month, yeah. This year.
It's all working, cooking. We need to cook it fully and bake it a bit. Right. Okay. So here's basically our futures. Think about it as basically what you would expect to see continually flow out over the next 12 to 18 or 24 months. So out of the box, extensibility, we spoke about this, support for Azure AD. You're going to have a unified designer. So one of the things in relation to BizTalk server was the fact that you had too many surfaces, too many UIs. Here, it's all going to be one designer surface in VS for you to go build your complete application. Right? Going forward, you would find us basically having the BizTalk portal also as part of the Azure portal. Today, we just call out to a different portal on clicking the Manage tab. So those are going to get unified. It's going to be one Azure portal. the private cloud marketplace, these are into the future. Hybrid development, we spoke about the need for hybrid, and we're going, the adapter extensibility framework that you support will be the same, even if you were to have your line of business application in the cloud or on your premise. Okay. BAM, is going to be a big call out in for the business analyst, business rules, right? For the IT admin, we're gonna go through a whole bunch of certifications. The service just, for example, now got certified for Drummond, which is a B2B requirement. A whole bunch of migration tools for you to basically migrate your solutions from on-prem to the cloud, role-based access. Today, we don't have an ability to upgrade from basic to standard to premium, et cetera. So SKU upgrade is going to be one of the things that's going to be coming up, right? So there's a whole bunch of things on our backlog which we kind of just keep pegging away at, right? Call for action. So any partners who are interested in partnering and building adapters with us on this new framework, right, please contact Guru. And that's a partnering opportunity. Anybody, any partners interested in migration tools from BTS to MABS, that's another partnering opportunity for anybody who wants to partner with us. We would soon be launching a private preview for a bunch of select partners in relation to workflow and rules, right? So if you want to be part of that preview program, Guru is your point of contact. So this is a book which one of our PMs co-authored. It's probably a good starting point. And gives you all a good overview of all the functionality that's out there. Related events, most of you were there in Guru's talk earlier in the day. So that's pretty much my end of my talk. And if there are any more questions, happy to take them.